I'm Maddie.
I'm Ryan, and this is The Mutant Ages, a show where we watch every adaptation of the X-Men.
We do.
And whatever we feel like doing at this point, and yeah. analyze the queer coding of it. And
that's
X-Men 97 is very, very gay.
It is.
And one of the problems I have with this episode,
is
aside from
not?
Storm stuff, which is incredible, is that this is very straight.
Well,
like this whole,
there is that one moment when Xavier is like supposed to get his memory deleted, and he's like, "But what about my ex-boyfriend,
Magneto?" That's like the gayest thing that happens the whole episode.
Yep.
But it's very much like okay, hi everybody, welcome to this show.
Yeah, we introduced it. We did it.
Back when we were young, we experienced a change. We felt a power grow.
Listen, I need to go ahead and say that Allison Celie Smith as Storm is so incredible in this
yes.
episode. And honestly, a lot of the Storm stuff is really good. But again, I'm so disappointed with this show right now because it had listed Life Death Part 1 and 2 as two separate episodes.
Yeah, lies.
And both
lies.
Episodes were barely about either of those things.
Nope.
And I'm kind of like, why did this show disrespect Storm in that kind of way?
This episode should have been called something else. Like genuinely, this episode shouldn't have been titled Life Death Part 2. That's not what it's about.
I do think this one was a little bit better than the last one.
Was
where like it,
it
was just an app it well but in the last episode we saw this, it was very much an afterthought where this was,
but it should have been called something like Lalandra / Life Death Part 2. I don't care what they call the space part. But
I guess my issue here is that like maybe not call it Life Death at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's
like, don't even call it anything. Don't even put Life Death in the title. Like literally at all.
Okay. But see, here's my argument about this episode versus the Jubilee one is that the Jubilee episode had this random Jubilee plot. And then there was
the
afterthought.
Like a part two of the episode with a different title card.
Exactly.
That
was like a super sped up version. Whereas this one,
it is interspersed.
As much as I bored as I fucking was watching all the Shi'ar stuff, it is telling two
shocking
love stories
no
at the
one.
Same time.
It is.
You know what I mean?
I guess we
and
should say for the new listeners who are hopping on for X-Men 97, we should say, you've already picked up that we hate Xavier and his respectability politics, but what you don't know is we hate the Shi'ar too. So this episode was a real whirlwind for
hold
us.
Hold on. Back the fuck up. Because I don't hate the Shi'ar when it's done well.
They're so stupid on this show, though. And this episode didn't fix that. Like,
no, okay. Well, I agree. There's like so much crazy shit happening in this. But I do think that the Shi'ar can be very interesting when written well. And in this episode,
not on X-Men in the 90s or in 2024, apparently.
Okay, but Deathbird is
Deathbird's
amazing.
Cool. She's very funny in
I
this.
I liked her.
And that's like, part of why I like the episode is because I'm like, well, at least the moment-to-moment jokes and plot beats are more interesting. Like, it's a modern show. It's an adult show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not as simplistically written as the kids show version of X-Men was. I'll give them that much. But there was so much goofy Shi'ar shit in here that I was just like, I don't care about this.
I honestly...
And it doesn't matter, and it's never going to matter, because we know as soon as we see Xavier's stupid face that he's coming back to Earth. We don't... Like, there's no stakes.
Part of the problem.
There's no stakes in this whole episode because Xavier the whole time is waffling around like, oh, should I stay in space? Oh, I don't know. And I'm like, you're gonna fucking leave. I know you're gonna leave. You know you're gonna leave. Why do we have to pretend for 23 minutes that you're not gonna leave? This is such a waste of time. And I don't even like the guy. But I was like, just go ahead and get on a ship back to Earth because we need to stop pretending that you're gonna do anything else.
I also need to say this. So I talk a lot about how I'm excited to see the X-Men come to the MCU, but I
yep.
also talk a lot about how the MCU has had so many problems since
yep.
Endgame.
Yep.
And yep. this episode is probably the first time that I felt like this was written in the MCU.
I know what you mean.
Everything with the Shi'ar and the aliens felt so MCU, even to the point where Forge's magic is depicted in the same way as Doctor Strange.
Yeah, this episode felt very MCU, and we do not mean that as a compliment.
Like, it literally has like fucking Ronin and the opening. And I was like, whoa, hold on. And it kind of looks like the animation from the Avengers cartoon that wasn't very good, that was more recent. Yep, and I was oof. I mean, the writing's a little bit better because it can be a little bit more adult.
It is, because it's funny. It's got some good jokes in there, for sure, that we'll get to.
But, like, it's just, it's very weird. And I don't...
Yeah, is this show good? This show slides back and forth so rapidly between being amazing and being so boring that it's crazy to watch it.
This episode was so hard to watch the first time around. I was getting so bored, and then I was doing other things, which is not a good sign.
I know, but it's never a good sign.
That is not a good sign. Except for when Storm is on the screen. Like, Storm, whenever she was doing something, I'd be like, oh, wait, I have to watch the show again. Storm's here.
I kept doing other things also, and then being like, I guess I have to rewind because I don't know what's happening. Again, not a good sign. Not a good sign.
Also, something that I will give credit to this episode is that Forge is basically naked for most of this episode, and I'm definitely not complaining about that.
I love Forge being a damsel in distress for Storm to save. That was all very cute. I think we both like the whole life-death part.
I do too, but my problem continues to be is like, I understand now why they had to do the Jubilee thing when they did, because it wouldn't fit on the second half of this show. But also, I know that Bo DeMeo was like, I need to project all my childhood trauma onto Jubilee.
Yeah, which was
a choice.
And write
a character who is not Jubilee. But if they'd gotten rid of that and just been like, okay.
Why didn't he do that with Roberto? We will never know the answer to this. Like, project all your childhood trauma onto Roberto. That works. Just write it. For him.
I think this is how I would have fixed this whole pacing issue. Is I would have taken the Goblet Queen arc and made it episodes 3 and 4, and have episode 4 splice in the life death story, but going back and forth like this one did.
Yeah, so basically cut Mo Tendo entirely.
Yes, and also give space to life death and to Madeline Pryor. And this is hard for me to say as a Jubilee fan and as a gamer.
No, I agree with you, because there was no point of that being there at all, other than Bo DeMeo's personal axe to grind, which
it was
okay,
very
dude.
Strange.
I don't know. And I don't think we needed that episode there to contrast with Remember It, you know? Like, I think that was part of it. The show, not just Bo DeMeo, but like probably the other writers were like, yeah, we need a really lighthearted episode so that then the gut punch of Remember It comes in. I'm like, that was going to be a gut punch no matter what, guys. You didn't need to show me a bunch of like dumb video game bleeps and bloops in order for me to be sad that fucking Gambit died. Like, it was going to happen for me no matter what. I was going to be sad.
The Genosha episode is great. I mean, here's another issue is that I think it's very strange that they traumatized a bunch of viewers with Genosha and then didn't wrap any of that. Yeah. I was like, okay. And I understand why it's happening.
Well, they wanted to give us a little break, I guess.
No, they had to give a reason to make Xavier come home. He needed to have that psychic vision that everyone was dead.
Which is, it is interesting that Xavier's psychic vision, he sees Gambit and not Magneto.
But also, they could have just tucked that in at the end of the episode somewhere. I don't know.
Kind of my complaint about this whole episode.
I would not have put it at the end of the Genosha episode. I think the way that episode ends is perfect.
It should be in this episode. But like, I think that the balance between Xavier's plotline and Storm's plotline in this episode, like the scale is weighted far too heavily in Xavier's department.
I agree.
Like they needed to just readjust the scale and have Storm be the main episode.
There's like an entire scene of fucking Lilandra and Xavier walking around like watering the garden. And I'm like, I don't care.
And they seem like they fucking hate each other in that scene, which is part of what's wrong with the stakes here, is that we don't really believe that they're in love with each other, because every time they talk to each other, they seem so like petty and angry
at
each other.
That part is interesting that they don't actually get along. I think that's hilarious.
Well, that's part of why I'm like, you know, he's gonna leave. Like, what? They hate each other. It's funny, but I'm also why am I watching this? Like, why is this episode here? It's so weird.
So anyway, I'm going to do a quick recap on previously on the X-Men.
Right,
so as we all know, in the beginning of this show, Magneto took over the X-Men as part of the will of Charles Xavier.
Who wasn't dead. Whatever.
No, whatever. And so then Magneto wanted to make Genosha join the UN, and we did the trial of Magneto. And during that, the Executioner created a gun based on the power dampening like collars that they put on mutants, yep. and he put it into a gun and shot it at Magneto, but Storm jumped in the way and she lost her powers.
Yep.
And then after that, Jean Grey turned out not to be Jean Grey. She turned out to be Madeline Pryor, the Goblin Queen. And I mentioned that because Storm keeps referring to Jean, because Storm does not know that the person she was talking to...
She doesn't know shit about shit when it comes to that. Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't know what happened with that. So that's important. And so then, since then, you know, Rogue and Nightcrawler and Gambit and Magneto went to Genosha and they had their whole...
They had like a fun-loving hanging out, dancing around with fucking Exodus in the streets.
And during like their gala, their mutant gala, this giant sentinel attacks and kills like a shitload of mutants.
Yes.
Including Gambit.
Well, Gambit and then, kamikazes himself to destroy that sentinel and save everyone.
He's the reason
everyone.
Why people is alive. Yes, I mean, he's a true correct. Hero. And Magneto also supposedly died, but we don't see it on screen. So like that
is... Yes, and the fact that we don't see it in Xavier's vision is another clue to me that he wasn't really dead. Because again,
yeah,
at the end, Xavier sees only Gambit. But that suggests, tragically for Katie's birthday, that Gambit is truly dead.
Well, for now. There's many seasons to come. But also, the other thing we need to mention is that Storm was approached by Forge in a bar in Texas when she was having her gay phase. And Forge is like, I want to fix you.
Yep.
And he's built this machine. And we can't really tell how much time has passed.
That's right.
It has been a month. I think
it has been at least a month. Yes.
Right. In this episode, at least reads to me that they've been dating for a while. So I think the language around that finally changed in a way that it could understand that.
That's correct. And I also, there's some other kind of hints of things. Like at one point, Forge calls it the adversary, Weaver of Lies, which is what Storm's nickname was for Forge in the previous episode. Do you remember I shouted that out?
You
I
did.
Thought that was interesting. So I was like, okay, these are more kind of dreamlike. Time is passing. You know what I mean? Like I felt like that was actually better done in this episode. Because they actually like had enough time to like have anything make any fucking sense. Whereas in the last episode, I was like, I don't really know what's going on, but I'm kind of trying to put it together based on the five lines of dialogue we have, you know?
Yeah.
And the adversary is a cool villain in this. I mean, that's part of why I was kind of sad that this wasn't the main thing.
Right. We're going to find out what the adversary is in this episode. But like at the end of that episode with Storm and Forge, this giant owl bird monster demon is like, I'm going to. It bites Forge and poisons him. And then Storm's like, what the hell's going on? And the adversary is like, oh, I'm going to feed off all your fucking trauma and grief and going to play with my food. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And like play with Storm for a while and just like let Forge sit there and die. But like play with Storm. And so Storm gets to fight back in this episode.
So that's all you really need to know for this episode. I mean, I guess, again, here's that situation where I'm going to go previously on the previous X-Men show. Xavier died, and they called Lilandra because they had that whole Phoenix Saga situation where they met. And so since then, they've been like back in touch, and they were like, Xavier's dying because he got shot by Gyrick, which is referenced at the beginning of this show, like on episode one.
Yeah, Gyrick is in prison for having killed Xavier. And Todd was pointing this out in our Slack, our Mutant Ages Dev Slack. Isn't that going to be a huge problem when Xavier comes back?
Like, I know, exactly.
Aren't all of humans going to be like, hold on a second, that guy's alive? So I think that's how Gyrick is going to get out of prison. And I'm guessing that's going to cause huge problems for everybody. But I guess we'll get there.
I mean, does it though? Because he like also attacked somebody, period. So that's
But I don't know, because I feel like Gyrick getting out of prison kind of tracks with almost the end of this episode. Well, okay.
Yeah, I okay.
Whatever. We can talk about the end of this episode when we get there. But that part's also crazy. Just as an aside.
That is what like really put me over the edge. But we'll get there.
That was where I started being like, is this show bad?
Yeah, I know. And then Xavier got sent to space at the end of the first X-Men TV show to get healed by Lilandra. And this is part of my problem with this episode is that it doesn't reference any
of that. Doesn't explain any of that.
It doesn't. I'm like, so I guess they cured him.
Yeah.
We don't know how or when. It's not even like, you know,
like,
he went out there.
And I feel like that's actually really helpful for the viewers who are only watching X-Men 97 and not watching the original series. Like, how about explain why he's even there? Like, they don't even do that. They kind of assume you know, and like, that's cool, whatever, and like, just tell the story. But
how long has it been for Xavier? Okay, so we know
years,
that.
Seemingly. Okay. Like, over a year because Jean was pregnant.
Well,
right?
But see, this is where I immediately get, this is so confusing for
me.
Because literally the way that we measure time is like how Earth rotates and goes an orbit around the sun, but that right. may not be how the Shi'ar Empire works. So, like, that's how correct. Much time has passed
and
over
like
there.
Time also changes according to space travel and like how quickly yes. you are traveling in
right.
space.
Right. So I'm like, wait. So how much time has he been over there? Because we don't actually have any idea.
I don't know.
You know,
apparently
even
long
if it was
enough
like 3 days
to fucking get engaged to Lilandra. I mean, we find that out in this episode. That's not a previously on, but like, it is crazy how much time appears to have passed for them, but it is possible that that's just the case. And he spent more time in yeah. space than we know and whatever. I don't care.
Right. Right.
I don't care about him. So I don't really care about that plot hole either, but it is annoying for the viewers who don't already know that Xavier was rescued by Lilandra kind of on the brink of death. And those people are just going to be confused watching this episode and be like, why the fuck is he alive? Who are any of these fucking characters?
Some of my friends who messaged me because they're watching this show for the first yep. time and they're like, they hadn't watched the original show, ask me quite a bit of questions.
I'm sure they did. Like, I'm sure they fucking did.
But they're really into it because they like the stories and the characters and the political plot lines. It's good. It's like, that's good.
I think other people also had a lot more patience for this episode than we did because they don't hate Xavier as much as we do.
And I think a lot of people had patience for it because they really want to see Storm do life death. So they'll grasp at straws to
and
get to see
that. And
that
part was great.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I feel about it. Yeah. Anyway, before we jump into the episode, I do have to say that in the opening credits, Nightcrawler now gets his own.
I know. He's Gambit replaced Gambit. And Magneto are gone.
I said this
I know.
Last week.
I know you
I was
did.
Like...
I didn't
I'm
disagree
like,
with you at all.
We're gonna be sad when Magneto and Gambit are no longer in the opening credits, but I do like that Nightcrawler is there, and that's a well-deserved
space
for him.
That was nice, but you know what wasn't nice about the opening credits? Seeing Lilandra in it 1,000 times, because they redo the opening credits every week to show you who's going to be in the episode, and once I saw Lilandra, I was like, oh no. Like, I already knew what was happening.
Well, you already knew it was going to happen because day beforehand, Marvel Entertainment released on their YouTube channel, like, a preview. They always do, like, a preview.
But they included stuff in the preview that wasn't even in this episode. Like, they put Captain America's shield in there. That's not in here.
No, you're not talking about that. They do, like, an actual clip from the episode that's usually, like, 45 seconds long to get you amped up for the episode the next day.
Or the opposite of amped up if it's us. And we're like,
well,
Lander
exactly
and Xavier.
What happened. Because like I watched the clip and yep. I knew that I was so excited for this week because I knew it was going to be the second half of Storm's story, and what they showed us was none of that. It was yep. like a 45 second clip of like Deathbird running around murdering people, murdering the Kree specifically.
Yes.
And I was like, immediately I typed into Slack, I was like, everybody, just so you know, like, you were looking for closure this week, and
you're
also
not
that
get it. You're not gonna get it.
And you were also looking for Storm story, and you're gonna get fucking Xavier. And everyone's like, there's no way. I'm like, no, I just watched the clip. That's absolutely what they're doing. And we do get to see spend some time with Storm, and that is great. But like, the majority of this is Xavier just being like, watch me teach a class. And I'm like, oh, fuck this guy. Like, I'm so bored already. And you know, here's my problem. Okay, so you're gonna love this, but I think any cast of any kind needs a bitch character in the cast to work. So number one, they need to bring in Emma Frost yep. into the team to make this work, because Xavier, I thought about it. I'm like, Xavier's kind of a bitch, but he's so self-absorbed.
He's in charge though. And that's why it doesn't work.
He's like me.
Yeah. And like, losing Gambit is, I mean, he's kind of sassy and he will talk back. And I feel like that's such an important presence. I mean, it's not quite the bitch character that you're talking about, but it is like a loss. And Kurt is not going to make up for that, because that's not the kind of character he is, you know?
No, exactly. And so like, I think it's important because like, we mentioned it before, but I'm rewatching all of Buffy in order right
yes,
now.
And
so,
and Cordelia is so
Cordelia
important
is a great
to how
example.
That show works.
Right, because but the thing is, that's different between characters like Emma Frost and Cordelia versus Xavier, is that those characters, Emma and Cordelia, are characters who have a lot of depth behind them. And like, all that bitch stuff is a huge persona that they've created
yep.
when they're actually deeply empathetic people. Mm-hmm. And that they're also very smart and they're able to read a situation really well.
Yep.
And like, you know, I just watched the episode that's like the, you know, in Buffy, the season 2 opener, where she's all traumatized from the end of season 1 and she's treating everyone like shit, and it's Cordelia that calls her out on that.
Yeah.
And Buffy's like, oh, are you worried you're not the biggest bitch anymore? And Cordelia's like, yeah, these mind games don't work on me, because like, I invented it. But that's a very Emma Frost energy, right?
Yep, it really is.
And so like, bringing Xavier in doesn't fill that role, because Xavier's just like, pay attention to me. And like, he's not a deeply empathetic person, if that makes any sense.
He's really not. And he's also just like, I'm in charge and everyone has to listen to me, which completely changes the gravitational pull of every single episode and its priorities.
But I think it's funny that you mentioned Gambit, because to me, the bitch character before was Magneto that was filling those roles. He was like the Emma Frost of that. And now he's not there. So they need to get him in there.
That's not true. I mean, I feel like also... And we can kind of see how the show goes along, but like Wolverine is often the character who talks back, and he hasn't really been on this show a lot, which is an interesting choice.
He's like, okay, but he doesn't meet that bitch criteria because he's not like masking his emotions by being a bitch. He just is openly like crying all the time.
That's true. I'm just pointing out, like, usually this show has had a lot of Wolverine episodes. It's just interesting that it hasn't this season. And it kind of speaks to maybe what the writer's room is into. Maybe they're just not that into Wolverine. I don't know. I just think it's an interesting contrast.
Until we get to like episode 8 and it's like a full sex scene between Morph and Logan, and street people just lose their fucking minds.
I mean, I would love that. I was worried you were going to be like, and it's a full Weapon X flashback, which could also happen.
Well, I don't know if they even have time for that, but who knows? I mean, they're trying to push a million things every episode.
Anyway,
going on now. So the opening this episode, I have to watch this gross thing of Lalandra and Xavier making out. I don't really care about it. I think it's part of the
really
opening
how
credits.
It start. Oh, you mean the opening credits? I thought you were talking about how the episode starts. I was like, it starts with a huge space battle, but.
Yeah, that's the MCU nonsense, because like fucking Ronan is there, and like this also annoyed me because it's like the Kree and Ronan are fighting against Deathbird and like a shitload of Shi'ar characters who they're doing that thing again, like with Exodus, where like he's just there on
there's
Genosha,
no explanation
shaking his hips, and I'm
for
like,
any of this.
I'm like, hold on, we're gonna skip Exodus' story to have him just be shaking his hips on the street of Genosha, and now in this episode we have fucking Vulcan there who's just like walking around in the background with Deathbird, no lines, barely doing anything. I'm like, hold on, Vulcan's here. We're not gonna address this.
Nope.
I just like, and you know, people are always like, oh, we love all the cameos on the show. I'm like, I Why? Don't. Because
Why?
Then it creates a problem from later. It's doing the same problem it did in X-Men TES, where they would have like cameos of characters and then later be like, oh, we have to like pretend that didn't happen because we just did a cameo of them. And so now we have to go back. Like, what they're going to have to do if they ever revisit Vulcan or Exodus. And I'm like, you can't just stick these characters here and like be like, haha, do you recognize them? Because eventually you're gonna have to do their plot lines if the show continues to get greenlit.
Which it probably will be, because it's been so successful. Like, they're already greenlighting season 3 and they're probably gonna make more and more seasons, so all these characters are gonna need to come back and like actually fill out the decades of comic books that they have to adapt here. So
and I feel the same way when they killed off so many people in Genosha, and I think that had a heavy emotional impact on the overall story, and I do like that piece.
Yeah, but it's like, what, Banshee's dead? Like, okay?
I think it's very weird that, like, Banshee... I thought it was very weird that Dazzler was potentially dead, or Sebastian Shaw. Like,
they're
you
not
can't
dead.
Just be done with
they can't
that
be.
Shit.
I mean, especially Sebastian Shaw, I'm like, you can't do that and then have Emma... Like, what are you doing? Like, what is going on?
It's
we're going to see what happens, but like, that's part of why the Genosha episode doesn't land in the right way for comic book fans, because we're like, okay, but those characters need to be there, you know?
I'm pretty sure, I might be wrong about this, but I thought that when they were showing character drawings for this show, you know, when they did that like a year and a half ago, there was a lineup that was like Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, Harry Leland, and Donald Pierce. So, like,
didn't
maybe
they
we're
have
not...
a Hellfire Club picture, but also that could have changed, you know? Like,
well,
that was
sure.
so long ago that they could have rewritten things. So, like, I don't feel like we should be basing things on that.
No, I don't know. So, we'll find out. But anyway, I just got really annoyed that Vulcan was here and that we're just not addressing the Vulcans here, where I saw so many other people be like, oh my God, it's Vulcan. I was like, okay, you can't just do this. You can't, like, his arc is
but
so
people
huge.
Love cameos because it just caters to that, like, impulse of being like, oh, I recognize this, and you don't think about the context of it and be like, wait, does it make any fucking sense that that character's even standing there?
I don't think it's as bad as, like, the original TES where they had, like, Mystique kidnap Rogue, but they didn't have, like, they didn't seem
to
recognize
each
other.
Yeah, but they didn't explain that. Yeah, I know.
I thought that was really weird.
Well, I feel like it's kind of funny because they had to explain it in last week's episode, remember it, where Rogue was talking about how Magneto and her specifically pretended to not know each other. Like, they actually had to have her spell that out, remember? Where she
I
was
like
that,
though.
We're
I
going to
show...
pretend we were never together, because they were like, okay, we need to explain this.
This show does
like,
that much better than the
they
original.
They do, because they have to, because they're like, okay, well, how do we explain Rogue and Magneto pretending they didn't know each other and just being like adversaries for the entirety of the original series, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Although I gotta say that this scene's pretty cool because it's not pretty cool, but
I
mean,
I was really shocked where you were going with that.
There's a part of the scene that's really cool where Ronan, this like super powerful character, just gets wiped out by Death Bird, and then she just steps on his face and she's like, "Listen, bitch." And
yeah. Death Bird is being hilarious for this entire time.
She's like
a
She-Ra character in this, and it's just amazing. Like, just full
a She-Ra villain, we should clarify. Like, she goes, "Be honored to fall at my feet, Ronan. For you shall be memorialized as the corpse upon which I posed." Which, like, damn, girl.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying, like, there's some good moments of this episode, and they're mostly Deathbird.
They are. She's very
funny.
I was not
expecting that.
I guess you should clarify. There's some good moments to the Xavier half of the episode and their Deathbird. There's plenty of good moments between Storm and Forge, but when it comes to the Xavier section, it's all Deathbird all the time. She's hilarious. Like, the memes that people have been making of her pointing at the Milky Way and being like, "It's a ghetto." Like, I've seen that in 1,000 permutations already because she calls our galaxy a ghetto and, like, insults it, and people love Deathbird to step on us. That's all we really want in life, is for her to crush us.
I mean, she's excellent. She's hilarious. I care for that. But this gets interrupted by, like, somebody being like, "Your sister needs to talk to you," but she doesn't need to talk to you. It's Lalandra just sending out, like, a news report to the galaxy.
Yes! Like, a psychic news report. I don't know. Where she's like, "So I fell in love with this Terran man who all of you hate."
There's like a...
Oh my God. Do you want me to read what she says? She goes, "No. 1 year ago, we offered..." Okay, fine. Who gives a shit? Most that she explains is that she's like, "We rescued this Terran man because he was sick and he needed our help. But what I didn't tell all of you that we were already kind of like hooking up psychically prior to that. And like, it's gone a lot further than that. And like, now we're fucking constantly. And it's like, made me forget the fact that I have like political responsibilities. But also, now that we've been together long enough, he's like really annoying me all the time. And I like kind of don't want to be with him anymore, but I don't want to like tell him that." Anyway, she's announcing all of that to the galaxy right now.
It's really funny. There's also a shot in here that is very on par with the original show that is like, do you remember how we made fun of that episode with the Morlocks? And there was just like 50 weird Morlocks at one point just standing there. They're poorly drawn. They have that in here, but they're not poorly drawn. But they have like... There's a shot of like, I guess, oh my God, I want to like find it and send it to you. That like,
I mean,
made
I'm
me
looking
laugh.
At it right now because I have it up. So like, I think I know what you're talking about. I'm going to take a picture of it. I think you're talking about this one. I just sent it to you in Slack. Is it that one?
No.
Because this is like there's so many shots of like 1,000 Shi'ar just standing around. And it's like, who are these people?
There's so many times that people are like having conversations in this episode and I just did not pay attention.
I know. There's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of Shi'ar standing around. It like looks like the fucking Star Wars Council where there's all these like floating discs that people are standing on.
I know. I really...
And it's like, why would you be standing on these discs? Like, how did you even get onto them? But there's like 50 people on each one and they're just floating around in this weird, huge council room. And I'm like, are all these people the Senate? What is
this?
It
looks like the Phantom Menace Senate.
It does.
It really
does. Absolutely does. And that's not a good thing. Like, this being similar to the Phantom Menace, I know you kind of have a soft spot for the Phantom Menace, and so do I, but this is not a good thing. This scene is not good.
I think Phantom Menace is interesting to watch, at least. This is not.
Yeah, it's kind of not.
Anyway.
So we see some shots, some cutaways of Araki, he's the old guy who's like, also bitchy and judgmental, and he's like kind of a fun character in this episode, and he's like listening to this being like,
I already skipped ahead to my notes on Aurora of Forge. I just skipped over like all the other scenes with like Xavier and Lalandra, and I was like, anyway, there's nothing here to talk about. Moving on.
Okay, well, there's one more thing to talk about that we did think was funny before we get to that scene, which is Lalandra introduces Charles to everyone, and he's wearing this exoskeleton that lets him walk. Which is going to come up later because he's a bitch about it, which fine, I get how he would have mixed feelings about that. But she introduces him as Professor Charles Xavier. And Todd and I lost our minds because we were like, why isn't she just calling him Charles Xavier? Why does the professorship matter? No one on this planet has any idea what that word means. What the fuck is happening? Like, why does that matter? Like, why did she introduce him as that? It's so funny. It's like as though they're worried the viewer won't recognize him or something if we don't call him Professor. It's so funny.
But then there's that whole scene where like Xavier and Lalandra are being bitchy at each other in the garden. I didn't write any of their lines down, but it was basically them just insulting each other's lifestyles for a full 5 minutes. And I
it
was
is,
like,
and it's like,
very toxic.
Why do they not like each other? So So when Xavier's being introduced to everybody, he like lifts up his arm and he's like, for the Imperium. And then later in the garden, he's like, I hope that fake ass display of patriotism fooled everybody. And Lelandra's like, you realize this is my job, right? And he's like, well, I don't really care about it because I actually would like to just live on Earth. And she's like, I can't rule the galaxy from there. And you know, that's going to be like a huge problem if you even introduce it to my sister or anyone else here. And he's like, well, I don't really like it here. Like, it's like, guys,
he's
break up.
Also, I like, you were like, why don't they get along? I'm like, well, Lelandra just dated Xavier and realizes he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, there's that.
But she also she is kind of self-absorbed too in the way that a politician has to be. Like, she has to serve her people. That's her whole life. And being in a relationship is kind of secondary to that. And she's explained that to Charles. She's basically like, look, I'm the empress of this entire galaxy. It's not the Milky Way. It's my own galaxy. And like, this is my entire life. Like, I need every single thing in my life to be devoted to this. And Xavier's like, but what about me? And she's like, you're secondary. Like, you're either willing to live with that or you're not. And that is our relationship that you entered into. And you're either okay with it or not. And like, that is selfish of her. But it's also like, why didn't Xavier understand that was what he was entering into to begin with? It's just a really weird conversation.
It is. Can we go to Aurora and Forge? I don't care about that anymore.
Sure. Well, do we want to mention the fact that she's like, don't your students on Earth think that you abandoned them? And Xavier's like, let's not worry about that right now. Like, it's hilarious. Like, even she's the one who brings it up. And he kind of like dodges the question.
But like, do they, though? I mean, I know that Cyclops feels that way, but like, I don't think any of the other X-Men feel that way. They're like, whatever.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I'm sure Cyclops feel that way. I think the other X-Men are mourning his loss, but they're also like, you know what? We got to move on. He was pretty old anyways. IDK. Like, they do seem like they've progressed onward, and Cyclops is the one who's having a full meltdown. However, that makes sense because this is the second father in his life who's abandoned him in favor of space. So,
and then Cyclops is like, I'm not going to abandon my child. And Madeline's like, we have to send him away. And Cyclops is like, no, I can't be there when it happens. I'm abandoning him right now. And I was like, oh my God, Scott.
Oh my God. So complicated. So we go to the farmhouse. Forge has been bitten by the adversary, and it looks like this goopy purple, like She-Ra type of a deal on his shoulder.
It was gooey Gus.
It does look like gooey Gus from Ghost Rider. And so Storm is like leaning over him with a glass of water, and she's like, drink water. And Forge is like, I hate water. And he throws it on the ground.
I know. And her is like, you're such a man. Like, stop being a little baby.
Yeah, he has man flu right now. So meanwhile, the adversary is like in the rafters.
So perfect to describe what's happening. That's like, he's not feeling well, and Forge is like, I don't want any help.
Storm has to fight the fucking adversary, and Forge is like, it's too hard. I don't know.
Well, I mean, later on, he does worry that he's dying. I will point
out. So. He kind of low-key is dying.
Because she's worried about what happens, like, if that venom reaches his heart. Like, that's something that Storm is actively concerned about.
It is bad. It is bad. We shouldn't make fun of Forge too hard. He is actually dying here. But this is a show where we tell jokes.
Yeah, he's also naked on the bed, so we're like, hello. So.
And he's wearing his, like, tiny short shorts.
That's it. He's not wearing anything else. I cannot stress that this man is basically naked.
Like, he may as well be wearing boxer shorts. I don't even know why he's bothering to wear the jeans anymore. Like, go down to your underwear, Forge.
Honestly, just take those off, too.
Yeah. Just be naked.
I like it. I'd be here for it. Forge is a hottie.
Yeah, he's adorable. However, the adversary is pointing out the problematic fave that Forge is in the background by being like, how many have suffered from his gifts? Like, referring to his fucking collars that he made.
Also, Allison Seeley Smith is doing the adversary's voice in addition to Storm, and it's good. It, like, that performance is crazy.
It's so cool because this is the adversary kind of speaking Storm's voice in her own mind, because in this interpretation, I mean, I love this. The adversary is almost like that voice in your head that fucking hates you. And they have it be Storm talking to herself.
I mean, it's, it but seems she's like talking in like a
creepy
demon.
Voice that's like, ah, your boyfriend sucks ass, bitch. And Storm is like, I know. I don't know why I'm hooking up with him. But also, he is kind of a good person and he feels bad. And the adversary's like, does he though?
Yeah, the adversary is like, just leave him and let him die. And Aurora's like, no, I don't do that. I don't leave people to die, even if they've done a horrible atrocity.
Yes.
Unless it's like bigoted. Like, I think Storm
like, will kill certain people, but she's like, Forge doesn't deserve to die.
Right, she's like, Forge did this, but he didn't actually create the thing that that did this to me. You know, that's right. kind of what she's like. She's like, yeah, he did a horrible thing, but he clearly is.
He's
trying to
make up for it. Like, he's actively trying to fix what he did.
Which is going
to
be interesting because later on in this episode, we're going to see that Trask also feels horrible about what he's created. So he's finally hit that.
I know, which doesn't really make a lot of sense because that felt like it was really rushed to me where I was like, didn't Trask, like, last time we saw him be like, I hate mutants. Bye. Like, it
well,
just...
Well, I mean, the last time we saw Trask, he did have that line that I was like, I kind of understand his perspective, where he's like...
Yeah, where he was like, we're being left behind by evolution.
I mean, I think it makes sense they're doing the arc for Trask where he kind of comes around, but I think he's going to die.
Yeah.
So, eventually, Storm freaks out, and she's, like, trying to break out of the house, but she can't because they're, like, trapped in it.
I know. She can't because of magic. I mean, it's fun because she's, like, beating a chair against a glass window, which would normally break it in one go, but it's not breaking. And this isn't, like, special unbreakable glass.
The adversary's like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, the adversary's like, that window isn't even there. None of this is real. Ha, ha.
I was going to say they get out later, but then I realized that Forge is the reason why that happened. So, like, I was like, how did that happen? But it does tell.
It does explain that. Yeah.
Okay, but there's like this cool thing where the adversary puts Storm inside a coffin where she is.
Yeah.
They do a lot with Storm's claustrophobia in this episode.
I love it, though. They make it so scary. Like, all this horror movie stuff for Storm is so cool. So Storm is now suddenly inside of a coffin, which is another piece of evidence that, like, the farmhouse they're in isn't even real. Time isn't real. You know, like, it manifests this coffin. Exactly.
Right.
And she's, like, beating on the side of the coffin. And you see, like, these close-ups of her eyes. And it's cool because those are kind of paired with the close-ups of the adversary's eyes and sort of highlighting the idea that, like, a lot of this is in her own mind, but the adversary is taking advantage of her dark thoughts.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah, which is really interesting. I mean, I really like what they did with the adversary here. I thought that was cool.
It's
and then
very
the adversary
cool.
is, like, repeating what Aurora said to Jean about how she was tempted to be human.
I have wondered what it would be like to be human.
Yeah.
It is a tempting daydream.
And the adversary is like, you said this, and Storm just goes, I was just so tired of the bigotry. Like, you know, like, that's what she gets to. And I was like, damn, Storm.
And it's like, that's why she got to this point. And the adversary disguises itself as, like, a weird version of her face and then a bunch of other faces. And the adversary says, is that way you fear your power, seek refuge with this monotone family, which is kind of like the weird thing she's doing with Forge, like living in this farmhouse. Not a very monotone family. Have you seen how pretty he is? Not monotone at all. Thank you very much.
But you know,
I get the point of this. And so Storm is, like, freaking out and being like, let me out, and beating her hands. And the adversary is turning into the rest of the X-Men.
Yeah. And the adversary says, Forge hasn't robbed you of your gifts. You've renounced them, which I thought was an interesting line, which is going to come up again later.
It is, because it turns out that, I guess, Forge's machine actually worked. And she just wasn't capable of summoning her powers last time we saw her. Again, I feel like they didn't spend enough time on this, but we're just putting it together. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I agree.
Whatever.
But then this gets interrupted because Forge turns into Doctor Strange. Because, I mean, Forge does have magical powers in the comics.
He does. Except that they literally animate it like the Doctor Strange circles.
Exactly.
Like, they do the Doctor Strange circles, like, exactly the same, because that's what magic in the MCU looks like. So that's what they're doing here for some reason. I didn't love that. I feel like they should have animated it differently. It would have been cool.
I agree. And he traps the adversary into a book, which he does say was, like, his mom's book, and that his mom had, like, practiced, like, a old,
some,
like, indigenous
magic.
And then Storm goes to check on Forge because he's, like, falling down and sees that the venom is, like, reaching his heart.
Yeah.
Which is really,
like,
crazy.
Like, he's collapsing now.
And
it's really sad.
This is why I was like, I wish we had spent the time that we needed to with these two characters, because, like, they have a moment here that I thought was pretty good, but, like, it's hard to believe because it's been so rushed.
It's been, like,
Aurora's
1 second.
Like, Aurora's like, man, maybe you're one of your mom's books has an answer on, like, what's going on with me and the adversary and how to get rid of it. And Forge is like, I know of a place. Storm's like, ready to go, and Forge wants to come with her, and Storm's like, no, you're no condition. And he's like, I think I'm going to die, dude, and I don't want to die alone. Like, basically what it comes down to. And that's when she says, then we ride together, my love. And I was like, okay, so they are
in love.
They are, There is like a relationship happening here, but it's just been so poorly.
We didn't get to fucking see it. Like, they're calling each other my love. And I'm like, when did we get here? Like, I believe that could happen in a month. They're both amazing. I believe that they could fall that hard and fast for each other. But it's also like, did the adversary bend time for them? You know what I mean? Like, that's believable too, that they could have been here for months in their perception.
They just needed to slow the fuck down and to show this to us.
It would have helped if we saw any of that happen, but we didn't.
We didn't.
Oh, well.
But first, Maddie, we have to go. Who's on
that? Okay. Are you going to do the adversary?
Yeah. But okay, I like her screaming at like old Sega Genesis commercial. It's like, Sega!
Sega!
Anyway, very quick. The adversary was created by Chris Claremont and John Romita Jr. It first appeared in Uncanny X-Men number 188. Its powers could, what are its powers really? But it's listed on Wikipedia as superhuman strength, speed, stamina, durability, magic, necromancy, dimensional travel. I mean, like, it's not a human being. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
During the Vietnam War, Forge saw his company slain by the North Vietnamese, and Forge used his shamanic heritage magic to summon the adversary to destroy the attackers, which gave the adversary a way onto the earth. Yeah. Forge's mentor was killed later on in his life by a dire wraith, which is an alien parasite. And the Nazi.
Comics.
Yeah. And the Nazi, I think that's correct.
I've always been pronouncing it Naze, which
Naze,
shows what
nasal
I know.
Spray.
But it's
Nazi.
Spelled N-A-Z-E, but maybe it's Nazi.
I thought it was Nazi or Nazi, but somebody else can write in and tell us how to correctly pronounce it.
Okay.
But they summoned the adversary, which just destroyed Nazi or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And the adversary then escaped the dimension it was bound to and captured Forge and Storm, imprisoning them in a stronghold of Roma. The adversary traveled to Dallas, Texas, where it battled the X-Men and the Freedom Force during Fall of the Mutants. The only way to banish the adversary was 9 souls willing to sacrifice themselves in a magical spell. The X-Men all agreed, and Forge cast the spell, and they all died. But then Roma secretly revived them, which led to Fall of the Mutants, which I was kind of hoping we were going to see a little bit of that in here, but it doesn't seem that way.
I guess they didn't.
They're like speeding through.
The Storm kind of like defeats the adversary with the power of therapy at the end of this episode. Like,
I will, but that's fine too. The adversary later returned to Earth after being physically born, but was banished again by Forge. And then finally, in Cable and X-Force, the adversary possesses Forge, but then gets trapped inside Dr. Nemesis' subconscious. I wonder if it's still there. Like, who even knows with Dr. Nemesis? What a weird guy.
I could see that being something that a writer just picks back up again in 20 years.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Like, that's comic books. Like, somebody at some point will be like, what happened to the adversary? Where did he end up?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm going to pick that up.
Anyway, so going back to this episode, we get a shot of Aurora and Forge, like, looking at each other, and then they morph into alien birds on another planet, which was a choice. And now it's like Xavier and Lalandra on their thrones, and Deathbird basically shows up, like, during this whole, like, Lalandra's like, we're together now, and Deathbird shows up and she's like, why the fuck are you marrying this piece of shit? And I was like, okay,
you're gonna skip over the part where Xavier described being a bottom? You didn't like that line?
I wasn't even paying attention to that, so I missed that.
Okay, well, there's a line where Xavier goes, your man speaks as if I am your pet, not an entirely displeasing thought. And Lalandra is like, I'm gonna make you bark later. And it's like, okay.
Okay, but like, if it were Magneto and Xavier, Xavier is still, well,
yeah, Xavier's, I don't know, he's a bottom in the Magneto relationship.
I feel like Magneto is a top, but I feel like Xavier in that relationship is really toxic, and he's like making Magneto do what he wants.
Hey, you can be a toxic bottom. He can be a bossy bottom that's a terrible person. So
yeah,
I don't know.
He's like, I'll just control your brain to do what I want you to do. And Magneto's like, oh my God. And he's like, if you don't do it, I'll remind you of the Holocaust. Like, I don't know.
They shouldn't be together, but they definitely were. And that was canon.
Well, I mean, so like, Deathbird has a really long monologue. If you did write that down, want to read it, I think that's fine because I think it's fun, but I didn't write it down. So,
well, first, Araki is talking that, you're really skipping so much. It's hilarious that Ryan just literally wrote down nothing during these scenes, and I'm the one being like, are we gonna go over any of these plot points?
No, I truly couldn't watch it. Okay, so when I watched the first time, I was barely paying attention, and then when I was going to take the notes
first,
it was
before
like
we even
mentally
get to
painful Bird,
there's
me.
Like other
I'm
things
just gonna
that
keep
happen
screaming. This is a terrible episode. All right, listen,
it's fine.
Anyway, so then in the next scene, Forge falls down.
No, stop! Oh my god! All right, so Deathbird shows
Gary
up.
Gary Oak walks out. He's Derek, like,
Deathbird shows up. I'm just gonna keep talking. Deathbird shows up and she's like, Knuckles, your consort was born on the wrong side of the stars. He is Terran. And Lalandra says, gentle sister, heed my throne. Because she's like, shut up, bitch. I am the queen.
She does pull that card a lot.
And Deathbird's like, a throne that is bound to do more than the whims of your heart. And this is, I think this is where I'm skipping forward. This is where Deathbird is like, okay, so I have a challenge that Xavier needs to fucking abandon all of Earth in order to actually live here. And it's not just like Xavier saying aloud, I renounce Earth. It's like he needs to delete all of Earth from his fucking memories in order to be married to Lalandra. Like, that's what Deathbird is challenging him to do.
Yeah.
And that is a conflict that, again, I don't care about, because we know that Xavier is not going to agree to do that. They lead us all the way to the brink of it. Like, Xavier's sitting there in the next scene where we see them, where he's like, oh my god, I'm gonna delete all of Earth from my memories. But then, of course, he's not gonna do it. And again, I don't care about that. I don't really care.
That's later on when he gets stuck and he's like, I don't know if I want to forget Magneto. Isn't that like what happens?
See, we do have this scene where Xavier's like, you know, I have a very old and very dear friend on Earth and I do not wish to forget him. His name is Magnus. And that's what he says to the Mohawk guy. Gladiator, is that his name?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even mention this before, but Gladiator's animation on this is actually kind of awesome.
I mean,
he's basically Superman, but like, whatever. It's animated.
Yeah, I mean, he was also on the original show.
Yeah, I didn't even say this earlier, but you know what this episode reminds me of? It's like, if the Justice League Unlimited was like done poorly, it would have been like the space shit with Shi'ar in this episode. So that's what it feels like.
It also reminds me of some of the sillier episodes with Deken during the Phoenix Saga, where like we recorded episodes on all the parts of that.
Okay, but that was like so funny to us because we told everybody to get stoned beforehand and like you can't do that with this episode.
You can't.
Well, me too. There's nothing to get stoned and watch.
I think honestly, like
if
you don't get paranoid while getting stoned, you can get stoned during this, but the adversary is pretty scary.
If you have insomnia, I recommend watching this episode because you'll definitely go to sleep.
Okay. So Xavier agrees. He's like, yes,
what scene are we even in right now?
Look, the fucking space scene is long. And I know you want to just skip over all of this, but we need to at least explain what's going on.
This has been another episode of The Mutant Ages. We'll see you next time.
Okay. So after Xavier tells Gladiator that he really wants to remember Magneto, Lalandra walks back up to him and she's like, so you ready to erase your entire fucking mind? And Xavier's like, honestly, I have mixed feelings about it. And she's like, who cares?
Right. So we're in the scene with Xavier and Gladiator. I see now. Okay. My notes are terrible, Maddie, like, because I only truly wrote down shit. I could not pay attention to. I watched this episode twice and I could not focus on Xavier and the Shi'ar shit. I was so bored. I was like, this is like the most boring shit I've ever seen on any X-Men show.
I am sympathetic to that, which is why I was trying to kind of rush through it and just hit the major plot beats. But is there anything else in the Gladiator scene you want to talk about?
No, I don't even remember what happens. I was just like trying to figure out where we are.
Do you want to go to Storm and Forge on the horse? Are you ready emotionally to go to that scene? Or do you have more you want to say about the Shi'ar scene that you took zero notes on?
I just like let Maddie do all the work and I just sat here and interrupted her the whole time.
I knew you didn't recap the Shi'ar things. I knew that. You said that going in.
Maddie, this is what my note says for that. It says, there's a really boring scene between Gladiator and Xavier. Now Lalandra and Xavier are having another boring conversation. Cut to Aurora and Forge. Those are my notes for that entire scene.
I mean, there's nothing really more to say about it. Anyway, so Forge has a flashlight. And he's like leaning on Aurora and they're walking through this cave, which apparently Union forces stored ammunitions here during the Civil War, which sure, fine. Forge knows a lot of military history.
Yeah. And Aurora's like, didn't these people hate you or something like that?
Well, so then Forge says it was actually built during the Plains War decades earlier, which that would be, you know, colonists versus indigenous people.
Right.
So yes, those are people who hate Forge. And Storm points that out. She's like, those wars exterminated your people. Why let them build such a thing into the very foundations of your land? And Forge goes, well, they said that they were here to help, sort of like how I came to you. And then Forge says, I heard the adversary telling you to let me die. And Storm is just kind of like not responding to this and just sort of absorbing it. And Forge is like, I'm so sorry, Aurora, for deceiving you.
Yeah, I mean, I like that he apologized
and
for that.
You can tell she's like processing this. Yeah, I really appreciate this. And he's also sorry about like bringing the adversary in, which like, yeah. I don't really know if that was fully his fault or not.
Well,
and Storm says that too. She goes, the demon was not your doing.
She does
say
that.
But like, whose doing was it? We don't actually know. The adversary just showed up.
Well, I mean, we didn't find out, but like, we know historically from the Wikipedia entry,
that's
I just
true.
Read everybody, that Forge already had a history with the adversary, so
that's
like,
a good point. So, but they didn't explain that on this fucking show.
No,
I think that would have been nice if
they had explained zero things in this entire episode, and they just wasted time for like Xavier and like Lilandra to walk around a garden and be bitchy at each other. And I was like, oh my god,
and Xavier to be like, I don't want to delete my memories. Ho hum. Let me talk about it for 20 minutes.
Anyway, so like Storm tells Forge the truth about how she had told what she thinks is Jean. That
yeah.
she had wished to be human,
yep.
and that she had confessed that to Jean, and she said that she was saying that to be supportive, but like truly, it was something that was going through her mind because she was just so tired of the bigotry and like,
yeah.
that she was exhausted from it all, and that like that lie has been weighing down with her because Storm does not lie. She's a character. She's like Wonder Woman. They don't.
Yeah.
They do not lie. Like that is just part of their.
And
character.
She feels horrible about right. it. And like this is interesting because it's kind of a parallel between the lie that Forge initially told her and the lie that Storm has been telling herself and everyone about like always being proud of her gifts all the time. And she's like, I get why you lied to me because you felt ashamed over something you did, but I've also been lying to people in the sense that sometimes I do feel really tired and I don't want to fucking do this anymore.
Yeah.
So this is a good scene for both of them.
Yeah.
Even though the lies aren't equitable, they both have their own version of a lie that they're like, I need to come clean about this.
Yeah. I didn't even really think about that. So that's a good way to point out how the scene was written.
Yeah.
So I appreciate
also,
that.
This is a cool line at the end where Forge says, growing up, I always heard how the worst weapon used by the Europeans was not bullets or blankets, but a white lie that they could make us ... And he doesn't get to finish the sentence. And so we don't know what it is, but I think he was going to say that they could make us weak because Storm later is like, I was believing the lie that I'm a weak person and I'm actually not. And like, that's what she overcomes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
that's a great
so
moment.
So that's something else that they bond over is the fact that like, it's not the literal like tools of extermination that were used. It was just the idea that they should be subjugated. And so that's kind of like Forge's little words of inspiration that he says at the last second before Storm heads really into the fucking thick of it in this cave. So he collapses and passes out.
Yep, that's like a whole thing.
And she's like, where's the cactus? And Forge is like, I know how you feel about tight spaces, but that's where it is. Sorry. She's like, oh shit. And there's like this tiny little like mine shaft that she has to crawl through.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. But before we see that, we have to go to Xavier wearing some ridiculous
Who
costume.
Cares?
Can I just say that Xavier is wearing like a helmet on his face that truly looks
and a
like
huge a, purple cape.
I was going to say the thing that he's wearing on his head is like truly something that you'd wear to like an anonymous orgy where everybody's naked except for one really extravagant headpiece, like that yep. is what he's wearing.
It, yeah,
it is so strange.
It's very weird. You can't really see any of his face at all.
Yeah, and they're gonna have Lilandra brainwash him.
They are, and she's charging up her psychic powers. And so Araki is like, so are you ready to erase all your memories? And Xavier goes, yup. And Araki's like, what about the memories of your X-Men? And then Xavier pauses for like 30 minutes. It's like, did you not think about this before right now?
And then Deathbird like flies in. She's like, see, he's a piece of shit. And I was like, oh my god.
I mean, he is.
This goes like 0 to 11 so fast because Deathbird's screaming about how like,
yeah,
what's the line about the freak fluids? Because it's actually pretty good, like mixing of his freak fluids.
Well mainly what she's accusing Xavier of doing, which is ironic because he's not actually trying to do this, is seeking an alliance with Earth and yeah. their galaxy. And Xavier's like, I really don't care at all about this. And she's like, you're trying to like fuck up our genetics, I guess, with your simian whatever. I'm trying to find freak fluids. I don't know that I wrote that down. I'm sorry.
I just thought I could not believe that they said freak fluids because it was literally referencing.
Well, I guess because she's talking about just him being a mutant, like in addition to being a simian, as she calls
like,
it. But
fluids is such a word that's like,
yeah,
this
she's talking about semen.
Yeah. I thought that was crazy that it was made it onto the show.
Hey,
I was
it's
like,
a show for adults, baby. People it die. Is, it people is. Bleed. People swear. And they talk about freak fluids.
Deathbird also tells that they need to renounce Lalandra because she's in love.
Yeah, so she says, my sister has gone mad, just like our brother Decan, and she's in love with this fucking freaky bitch, and everybody starts shooting. Like a war starts breaking out.
Like in this room?
Yes.
Well, first Lalandra says, you know, seize her and throw her in the dungeon, basically, because she is trying to stage a coup.
She's trying to stage a coup. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Deathbird, unfortunately, already has a lot of soldiers on her side. So the soldiers start fighting each other. And then in the background, Xavier goes, I have forgotten my greatest gift. Brainwashing everybody. And then like, what does he do, Ryan?
He puts them all in a classroom and they, yep. We have to watch. I didn't write any of this down. We're not even there yet, but there's going to be a whole scene where they're like doing lessons. And I was like, I do not care.
Well, we are there. What do you mean we're not there yet? We are
no,
there.
No, we have to go back to Storm first and then.
Oh, we're going to skip over Xavier sassily biting into an apple and being like,
that's all he does.
Hi, class is now he's in session. Snap, snap. And everybody's just sitting at desks.
I thought to say, well, we do the whole classroom scene in a minute because first we go through Storm crawling through the mine, which is pretty badass because she's still doing it despite that she's terrified.
I know. And she's carrying the flashlight in her mouth and she's like crawling along, looking fucking terrified.
Yep.
And the adversary is there in the background, just like saying shit to her. You had to be there. Be the bigger woman. Had to save
him.
Well,
first she drops like her flashlight down like a tunnel.
Yeah. She drops the flashlight as the adversary is talking. Had to save him, be above it, now look at you. And Storm is like, no, Forge destroyed you. And the adversary's like, I'm in your fucking head. You can never destroy me. And it says, ooh, yummy to her, which is terrifying. The adversary is like really well written and fun in this episode.
I know.
And it's like, submit and I will save you and let you live your tempting daydream, which I guess suggests that she will continue to be human. If she submits to the adversary, which of course we know she's not going to do that.
By the way, we have to mention that like she's crawling down this tunnel and it's now...
It's dark.
It's dark. And also like the tunnel is like the walls are moving in her, which they're not. But
yeah,
they're
but
like
she
crushing
she feels
her.
Like they are. But right. I think that's an illusion. Like she's actually not being crushed to death. It's the adversary and also her own claustrophobia.
And the adversary is just like, you know, give in. And Aurora's like, no, you demon, not a daydream. And then she starts, this is awesome, where she pushes the walls apart. And she goes, the executioner's neutralizer was not the only weapon tamping down my gifts. There was that lie and I believed it.
Yeah.
Which great, great fucking line. And the adversary goes, be warned, be smart, believe in the lie, deny your power, play dead or humanity will thunder down upon you, unkind. And Aurora goes, you are all an echo of who I am, which I fucking like. Because outside we see that she is creating a storm.
Yeah.
And she screams, so let them thunder for I am lightning. And like... the adversary explodes into a million feathers. So what you're going to see is that Storm's going to go through like this whole Omega level storm transformation where like we're going to see every possible weather happen and she gets her new costume. I didn't know this notice this before because you and Todd were talking about like how Storm can change her clothing as long as the material, but they're like, where did the headband come from? If you rewatch the scene, what she has done is she's taken all the feathers from the adversary and has transformed them into her new clothing. You see the feathers blow off of her. And I was like, that's fucking dope. She just like killed this demon and used its fucking skin to create her new costume.
Yeah, it's pretty badass if you look at it that way. You're right. The feathers are flying around. And then she's like flying around posing. She grows all of her hair back. Don't really
question mark
that
on
part.
That. I don't either that either.
But she doesn't have a mohawk anymore. Now she has all hair.
The music here is awesome.
You can't not love this, even though I was kind of like, I guess we're not doing Yukio, just quietly in the background. I'm Roberto saying, I guess we're not going to finish the movie. Well,
who knows? Maybe we'll see Yukio later. We can only cross our fingers and hope. And the music is so good. We see her look down at her reflection in the water and she smiles and she laughs and she flies up in the air between all those tornadoes. I didn't even mention this, but like, when she creates this Omega level storm, we see it from the point of view of a satellite in space where the storm is going.
It's like an anime moment where it's like you zoom out and see the planet exploding or whatever, because it's like
the weather is leaving the atmosphere and going into space. And then she herself goes into space very briefly, which is like crazy that she is like this powerful. And yeah. it's so fucking cool. It's so good. I love that when she's like flying along all the horses.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Beautiful. Like this whole scene amazing. Is so good. It's just like, I just wish it was more earned from the TV show itself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to watch, but like, it does kind of feel like we got this epic climax that kind of didn't have enough build up.
Yeah, exactly.
Where we're like, okay, yeah, I have all the emotions here, but none of the like structural plot beats. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And like, I'm so glad she destroyed the adversary with the power of her mind, but like, how did that work?
I don't really understand that. And but then they go fine, back to the cabin and like Ford's sure just sitting there and she's rubbing this green cactus goo on his venom. So like, I mean, the adversary was real to some degree. It literally infected Ford. Like it is a demon.
And she goes, what are demons but reflections of our fears and shame?
Yeah.
Things we bury within us.
They also make this joke about going to a tropical island next on vacation.
They do. And so I was going to point this out. We skipped over it because we skipped all the Lalandra and Xavier scenes, but Lalandra and Xavier talk about going to a tropical island too. And I thought that was intentional and really cool.
I agree.
They have them talk about it like, oh, for our honeymoon, we should go to a tropical island. Ha ha. And then in this moment, Storm and Forge, who are also in love, far more in love than Xavier and Lalandra seem to be, they talk about going to a tropical island together. And that's so heartbreaking because we know that the tropical island that is like
Genosha.
The getaway for mutants, that is a safe place for mutants to actually vacation or actually live, is destroyed, which they're about to find out because Storm stands up from her healing boyfriend to walk over to the big CRT TV and turn it on because now the TV finally works because the adversary is gone. And so they're finally capable of watching television again. I love Forge picking up this fucking huge ass remote. Like the old technology is really fun to watch. It's great. It's great. But of course, as soon as they turn on that CRT, they see Trish fucking Tilby being like,
I'm winning this Emmy on my coverage of Genosha.
Yeah. And it's like tragedy in Genosha FC news. And it like shows everything that's been happening. And Storm immediately bursts out sobbing and angry because of course she does. I mean, what's happened is the most horrifying possible thing.
I really want to see how things turn out in the future episodes when she gets not only finds out that like this happened to Genosha, but that Jean wasn't Jean and that like Magneto is dead and that Gambit is dead.
And that Xavier's alive turns out because Xavier's going to show up. Like lots of shocking things are about to happen.
Well, I mean, this is why I'm like, is this going to result in Storm just like destroying everything? I hope it does. I hope that's what the lead up is.
Well, here's another prediction I have. Do you think that it's going to seem like Xavier comes back, but it's actually Cassandra Nova and guys, because like this episode is teeing up Xavier coming back, but like what if it seemed like he came back but it wasn't really him?
I don't know, the fucking production team on this were like, don't get your hopes up for Cassandra Nova or Bastion because we're gonna do something that makes no fucking sense at all.
I know, we're gonna talk about that, but first we have to go back to Xavier's stupid classroom where he put a bunch of aliens at American public school desks and is like twirling a globe around on his desk and he's like twirling a globe and I'm like, they don't even live on that planet. Why do you have a globe with the United States on it?
He's like making them ask questions and like,
he's
I
like,
just
excuse
I was
excuse me gladiator, raise your hand, and everyone's like, why is this happening?
Yeah, he's also like, we're also gonna go over the history of the Shi'ar Empire and American history. And I was like, oh my God, I don't care, Xavier. Use your superpower to be annoying. Like, I just
his superpower is
Jesus
to be annoying.
Christ, this whole
I
scene.
Realize some people like this scene. I'm sorry, we hate it. I just think it's really fucking annoying. I don't care.
He okay, is annoying.
And also, Xavier is like going over the fact that the Shi'ar are like an imperial force and they're like killing all these other beings. Like that's what the lecture is about, is that he's like, your empire is a harvest of stolen worlds. Younger cultures that had they not been tilled to death would now be empires. And it's like, okay, sure, but why does that matter? Because you're gonna leave anyway.
Do you think eventually the Shi'ar will be in the MCU as like a main antagonist to Earth, being like, we're just coming to conquer you? I hope that's kind of the case.
I mean, I guess that could happen. I don't know.
I just want to point out that it's also wild that the MCU has no releases this year because they can't figure out what to do right now.
Okay, but they also have like four movies coming out next year, allegedly.
I know, supposedly. But like this year it's like Wolverine and Deadpool, which is like barely an MCU movie. Anyway, so eventually what happens is that Xavier starts freaking out because he sees the globe start spinning around crazily.
Yeah.
Because we don't need to talk about the class. We don't care.
Yeah.
And then he starts having this vision where, like, the classroom is full of, like,
skeletons.
Millions of desks with skeletons at the desk. And he's, like, understanding that, like, like, I kind of wonder if he's feeling this, like, as it's happening in Genosha.
I think he does. I think it's like an Obi-Wan Kenobi feeling a planet's destruction moment where, like, as soon as it happens, yes, I assume this was concurrent with the destruction of Genosha.
Okay, but, like, less dramatic, way more dramatic than Obi-Wan Kenobi, because then in Star Wars, Obi-Wan Kenobi just kind of goes, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Xavier's like, he's seeing these psychic visions, and, like, Gambit appears, and then Gambit turns into a skeleton, and then Gambit turns into, like, the Master Mold monster and, like, kills Xavier. And Xavier, like, is screaming. What's that line he goes from? Like, they were singing, dancing, making love from New
X-Men. Which is a line from the comics.
Which, again, I'm like, will you stop borrowing Grant Morrison's shit if you're not going to actually have Cassandra Nova be there? Like,
well, maybe they are. I mean, are you already assuming, based on the end of this episode, that it's going to be Sinister and not Cassandra Nova? Because I don't know if I'm convinced.
I think it is. But, like, I don't fucking understand why. Okay, we'll get to that. Can we finish this scene first? Like, where it's like fucking Xavier falling down on the ground.
So Xavier passes out from shock at all of this, and Lalanda runs over and is like, Charles! And Deathbird is like, why the fuck do we have to do any of this? Like, she's just, like, in the background, and I'm like, did Xavier solve anything? Like, the fight wasn't resolved at
all. He's like, I gotta go home. And Lalanda's like, if you leave, Deathbird's gonna be pointed, like, she's gonna be right, and all this ends. Like Xavier's like, I can't be here anymore. Like, I need to go. Like, something really horrible has happened.
Yeah.
The worst thing that could possibly happen on my planet has just happened, and I have to go, like, right now. And Lalanda's like, we may never see each other again. And, like, Xavier's like, that's fine.
And he's like, yeah, it turns out I don't care. I could have told you that based on how you were acting towards her this whole episode. You don't really seem like you like her that much. I don't know.
Well, okay, but I think you're right, though, that he doesn't say anything about Magneto here. And I think in the next episode, we're going to see, like, Gambit's coffin be put into the ground, which is going to be really sad.
But then it's like, well, what happened to Magneto's body? Do they have
it? That's like a whole other thing. I'm like, I want to know what they do with that. But given the way that the speed of this show runs, I'm like, we'll never see, like, how these characters get to react to this. Like, we're not going to see, like, Rogue coming home and be like, Gambit's dead, and then Jubilee, like, freaking out and running outside crying, or Logan, you know, like.
I mean, that would be nice, actually, to have that emotional closure of us getting to see the other characters hear the news.
I don't trust it's gonna happen, because I mean, they have done some really emotionally compelling stories, especially in the Genosha episode.
Yeah,
but generally the pacing of the show is like, let's move as fast as humanly possible, and I'm like, why?
I know. This is why we like X-Men Evolution so much, because it actually lets those moments breathe, and we get to watch the characters process news that they're receiving talk about
it.
But
I think it depends on the episode, because, like, episodes 1, 2, and 5 are, like, perfectly paced. 3, like, the pacing's weird, but, like, I overall like the story. It's just, like, 4 and 6 are, like, so all over the place.
I know.
And I'm like,
I think 6 might be even worse than 4, but it's a tough call, because 4 had some real problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least
6 wasn't actively offensive.
Yeah, I mean, like, pick your poison.
I know, but it is not a great ep. All right, so this is the final scene of the episode.
Yeah. Trask is running through, I don't know where, Silent Hill.
Yeah, it's like, where is he running through?
It's like a suburban neighborhood covered in rusted vines.
It's abandoned. Like, he is literally running through Silent Hill. Let's go with that. He is running through Silent Hill. This is like a nightmare he's having that we have access to for some fucking reason. So he's running through and he's talking to someone, but we don't know who. And he's like, I gave you my DNA to access Master Mold. And he's running towards a building that's lit up with green light. And I say that because I'm still kind of like, what's with all the green light? And then he's hit in the back with red light.
I noticed that too. Like, because he is talking to Sinister, but he gets shot in the back and Sinister appears in front of him. So I'm like, so what was that?
Yeah.
Like, what are we looking at?
So he continues and he says, he falls to the ground and he says, kill me, please, for what happened in Genosha.
He's like sobbing. Like, Trask is sobbing
and he's like, I beg you. And then Sinister goes, don't take all the blame, Bolivar, and don't fret the future. Why, Genosha was merely the beginning of a prologue now past.
So
you have nothing to fear, so long as you place your faith in Sinister. And then we see a bunch of green light again.
Right.
And then the red eyes of Sinister, which, again, I'm like, okay, so the green wasn't Cassandra Nova?
I mean, now that you describe it, it's like, is it?
Is it?
I mean, is Sinister just, like, fucking with him in addition to what's happening?
Or,
like,
is someone, because I don't know, dude.
So here's the thing, is that Sinister does create, like, Nate Gray, right? Like, so is he referencing the future that he's, because he, like, is Sinister, because of the whole Cable Nate Gray strife nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he referencing that he's already got ties to the future because there's all these time travelers that are now in his creation? Is this an apocalypse thing?
Right, because he says, don't fret the future. And he does say all that, like, right. Past, present, future, you know, like, what does that mean?
It's almost as if he, like, has knowledge that we don't. But, like, I do feel like it would be a nice twist if this scene is, like, setting it up and they're like, oh, it's sinister behind this. And then they're like, it's actually not sinister.
It's actually strife or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, he is aware of what's happening. I don't know. I'm holding out hope because it is weird. They, like, reveal that Sinister sent Master Mold to kill a bunch of mutants, I'd be like, this show does not understand who Mr. Sinister is, and that's just sad.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Sinister wouldn't just neutral, he wouldn't vaporize a bunch of mutants because he'd be like,
he would want to harvest their DNA.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, he's
and
like,
so vaporizing them doesn't really help with that because it's gonna destroy pretty much all of their bodies
unless he's already got their genetics and we're gonna reveal he's like, I have clones all these characters.
But then why does he care if they're alive or not if he has all these clones? Why do we even care about destroying Genosha at that point?
I don't know. We're gonna have to wait and see because I genuinely do not understand.
Well,
this
yeah, I mean,
all.
I think both of us seeing this were like, why would it be sinister? Like, what? Like, it was a very, very unsatisfying.
Do not insult my man like that.
I mean, I'm not going to defend Sinister. He's pretty fucking evil, especially in the time period that they're depicting here. Like, in the era of comic books they're adapting, he's pretty evil. But this just isn't typically what he does. And it also feels like a missed opportunity for some of the other storylines we were predicting that I think would have been more interesting than this. But also, the line is confusing enough that he says at the end, that it's not clear that he's fully behind it.
Well, but also, like, he also is in front of Trask when Trask is getting shot from behind. Right. And it's like, well, what is happening here? Like, yeah, I genuinely, like, I watched this scene multiple times and I was like, what the hell is happening? I can't even understand.
And also, like, where is Trask? Like, what is this green building he's running up to? It has a really weird logo on the door.
Like, what is going on here in general? Like, I mean, it could have been Sinister that shot him and then teleported around, but I'm just like, what is happening? Like, what is happening? Like, I don't mean this in, like, a, oh my God, it's a cliffhanger. I'm like, genuinely, this makes no fucking sense to me. Yeah. I don't understand. Like, stop.
I'm like, scrubbing through, trying to, like, read all the signs in the background. So he runs by an abandoned theater that says War of the Worlds, which, like, that's an alien movie.
Yeah.
So, like, is that a clue? I don't know. And then the building.
Also, you have to think back to, what were those titles in Mojo's thing? It was a divorce court.
Yeah.
Who's the Boss? And then some other one. Like, it was, like, from another world,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was Different Worlds, and that was Storm starring in Different Worlds, which,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just trying to put together what the fuck this is supposed to symbolize, mostly because I don't really feel like this makes any sense at all.
It doesn't.
And also, like, why would Trask give Sinister his DNA for Master Mold? Like, what good would Sinister have for that? Genuinely, I'm, like, genuinely asking, like, what good would that be to him to have Master Mold?
That's why I say it makes no sense. I was like, either they don't know who Sinister is as a character, it's a little or this worrying. Is a misdirect.
It's a little worrying. Like, this was the moment where I was like, this show might be bad because I don't like this and understand
but also,
it.
What if it's a misdirect?
If it's a misdirect, fine.
Something.
I don't buy it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't buy it as a misdirect because I'm like, I already know this is wrong.
I think it has something to do with the time travel because it's like,
yeah,
because
the past, degree, the past, like, prologue, present, future line is very,
are they going to do, like, Genosha again? And, like, they don't get to, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. There's so much time travel shit happening right now that I'm like, I don't know.
I know.
So
I know.
Anyway,
I can't. Anyway, what are you going to rate the episode?
Okay, wait.
Because we're at the end now.
Hold on. I'm quickly reading something before we do that because I want to see. Yeah, so Nate Gray, in a parallel reality known as the Age of Apocalypse, was one of the elite horsemen of the High Lord Apocalypse, and he was artificially created Nate from genetic material from Cyclops and Phoenix. Sinister created Nate as the ultimate mutant and hoped to use him as his own bid for power against Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only thing that I could see coming out of this. Right. That's what I wanted to Google because I was
Nate,
like,
Nate Gray being a separate character from Nathan Summers, we realize that's confusing for normal people. I figured we may as well spell that out now. Like, there's already a Nate on this show and it's not
and
that
then
one.
Also there's also there's also Strife, which is, like, yet another clone. So
yeah,
anyway,
great stuff. Cable has a couple of clones or a couple kind of versions of himself, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So, like, that's why I had to look it up because I was like, I mean, Nate Gray was created in Age of Apocalypse. Are they doing that? Like, that, because then I would buy this scene at the end here where I would be like, okay, maybe it's like him setting up the pieces to go against Apocalypse.
But I still also, don't understand why he needs Trask DNA, though. That part makes no sense to me.
I don't understand either. Okay, but so, like, you know who needed Trask's DNA was Cassandra Nova, because she needed that to access the Master Mold.
Well, that's part of why I'm like, is it... I mean, are they just replacing Cassandra Nova with Sinister? Because that's so boring.
That would be so stupid, and I really hope that's not the case.
Me too.
Anyway, to answer your question about the rating, is that, like, originally I was like, it's a 1 out of 5, but I was like, okay.
Ryan was very angry all week, and he was like, I don't even want to record the episode. I'm so mad.
It was like that. I wasn't even mad. I was just like, this episode's, like, so hard for me to watch. And so I was like, all right, let me, like, break it down and get to a number that I find is reasonable, like, from a critical standpoint. So I sent you this little list, but I'm going to read it here, where I was like, my 1 to 5 throughout the episode. 3, death part stepping on a dude.
Oh, is that what this was? I didn't even understand what the fuck this list meant.
Well, you know, it's me. I don't explain anything.
It's just like a series of sentences with numbers next to them.
I just sent a list, and then I'm like, so anyway.
You need to post this in the Discord, because this list was incomprehensible to me, and I just completely ignored it, because I was like, I don't know what the fuck Ryan is saying.
I'm going to just read it. It says, 3, death part stepping on a dude. 1, all of Lalandra and Xavier flirting and walking around the area. Boring as fuck. Like a 3-4 Stormforge in the adversary scene. 5, Deathbird telling Lalandra that she must wipe Xavier's memory because that's pretty sick.
Yep.
1, Xavier and Gladiator talking to each other. 1, Xavier and Lalandra's boring fucking conversation.
I'm now realizing that you were rating out of 5 every single scene in the episode, and then you took an average. Is that what you did?
I did. And so then,
that's hilarious.
I said, well, initially, I'm getting to 3 now, but the first time I watched Stormforge in my mind, I was like, kind of like, what's happening?
Yeah,
I
no, it's pretty good, 2,
but
though.
I feel like, I think it's 3. I give it a 3. And I went 5, Deathbird just being like, Xavier is a piece of shit. 3, Gladiator's animation. 5, Aurora in the mind versus the adversary. Yep. 5, Aurora getting her powers back and flying around. 1, Xavier's really fucking boring class of vision. 1, whatever the fuck is going on with Sinister at the end of this episode. So I averaged it up to like a 2 out of 5 X's.
Yeah.
Because I could not like judge this fairly.
I think that's really funny that that's why you did. I understand exactly now why you sent me this, even though at like, the time I was like, what are these numbers? Like, what is Ryan saying?
I mean, I said many like random things all the time. I just don't explain them.
It's fine. I don't question it anymore. Like, yeah, you now, could just be like 7. Knuckles isn't there.
Wait, you're right. I'm looking.
2. Wait, Knuckles like, is there.
Wait. I sent you this list, and all I say is I did a quick recap of the ep. I skipped most of the scenes with Xavier, and I didn't write any dialogue down except for Storm getting her powers back. And then I just didn't explain why I put that there.
Yeah, you didn't explain that. You were like, I did a quick recap of the app, and I was like, I guess this is a recap of the app, but I don't know what the numbers mean at all. Because you didn't explain that part. And also some of the entries are like Gladiator's animation. Like, what was I supposed to even think that meant? Anyway, it doesn't matter. I think it's a 2 for me also, because, and the 2 is truly just 2 points, 1 for Forge and 1 for Storm, I guess, for the adversary. Well, because I'm just like, I really like those scenes. I think they were cool. I wish they hadn't felt so fucking rushed. There's also like this weird thing that happened in those scenes where it almost felt like the characters were talking so fast. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, sometimes it truly feels like the characters themselves are rushing through the episode, and it makes watching it really weird.
Yeah, and I feel that, like, well, this is the problem we had with the other episode that was Life Death, where it's like, I was like,
I know.
Slow down and just tell this story, please.
Well, like, I remember it particularly when Forge is, like, taking out the Doctor Strange notebook. He was talking so fast there. Like, I kept having to, like, pause it and be like, what are you saying right now? Like, why are you spinning around and there's floating circles suddenly? Because the actor was just speaking so quickly, and I guess it was because they had to cram it all in. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It was a really weird experience watching it.
I don't know.
I'm also like, I'm not even sure we can do who's gay, because like, we kind of have the implication of Magneto.
I thought about
but
that, and like, that's, I was like, this is why the episode is bad. There. It was too straight.
It's barely like, in there, and I don't even really feel like that merits the theme song. So let's just do Who's That X-Men, shall we?
Okay.
Who's that X-Men?
Okay, wait. We actually like did that in unison. That was crazy. The listeners don't know this. Maddie matches it up, but like usually we say it at completely different times.
Sometimes I can barely match it up because we
like
don't.
Like that time that Todd was here and he listened to us do it and he was like, Jesus, what the hell?
Yeah, it's like, truly like we just say it and then we say it when we say it.
That's
like,
right.
People don't need to know what it sounds like. Anyway,
we're gonna talk about Deathbird. A quickie on Deathbird, whose real name is Calcie, or it's okay. It's
oh
pronounced,
boy,
it's
an alien name.
C-A-L apostrophe S-Y-E-E.
All right, I'm gonna look this up because I want to look
like
at what it. Calcie. I love this. Neramani.
Well, we call her Deathbird. It's like one of those, Maddie. All right, listeners, please go watch on our YouTube channel when Maddie and I found like this old journal from when I was like 10. And I did like a Star Wars fan fiction in there. And one of the, this reminds
you invented,
me of the, one
like
of the
Star
names,
Wars characters. You were trying to
one
invent
of
Star
name
Wars
was,
names.
Like, spelled crazily. It was like Sinwix Wix.
That's because you were trying to imitate George Lucas's weird naming conventions. You were doing your best. So you were like, I'm just going to put in a bunch of consonants. I don't know.
It's never spelled again in that. Like, I never say it again. Anyway, Deathbird is created by Chris Claremont and Keith Pullard. First appeared in Miss Marvel number 9 because she was originally a Carol Danvers villain. She was not here for the X-Men initially. Her powers include superhuman strength, stamina, sturdiness, razor sharp talons, flight, and that's about it. Deathbird was born to the ruling house of the Shi'ar Empyrean of Eri, now known as Shandalar, which they say in this. So it's just fun facts. Native world of the Shi'ar. Her name was stripped from her after it was prophesied that she was destined to commit great evil and was exiled after brutally murdering her mother and unnamed sister. Not Lilandra. Lilandra is a different sister that she has. Just doing that.
Yep.
During the exile, she traveled to Earth and worked with MODOK and AIM, where she faced off with Carol Danvers, where she almost died. Later, Lilandra became Magistrix, Magistrix, Magistrix.
Yeah,
Magistrix.
Whatever they want to call it. They don't even use that word in this episode. They just call her
they
Empress.
Don't. I forget how to pronounce that word because it's,
well, it's
magistry.
Not a real
I think
word.
It's, wait, magistry. That's how it's pronounced, right?
No.
Look it up. I'm Googling it.
Magistrix. Why wouldn't you pronounce the X? It's like dominatrix.
Is it not a real word or is it?
I think it's just a sci-fi word.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Anyway, later Lilandra became the queen of the empire after Deken was left comatose. We all know how that happened. I think we talked about it on the Deken episode.
I think we did, yeah. People can go back and enjoy the Phoenix episodes that we did. That's like a five-part
Totally.
Episode. It might actually help.
It might. Deathbird decided she wanted the throne for herself and allied with Samadar and the Brood and renegade members of the Imperial Guard to stage a coup. The X-Men defeated them. She did later succeed in deposing Lilandra with the Brood and took the throne for herself. As the ruler of the Shi'ar, she fought the Starjammers and Excalibur and attempted to take Rachel Summers, but Deathbird was nearly killed by Lilandra during all that. Later, War Skulls and the Starjammers aided Lilandra in deposing Deathbird from the throne, and Deathbird ceded the Empire back to Lilandra because she was just bored of the bureaucracy. So after taking over, Deathbird's like, I don't even want to be queen.
Because it seems really fucking boring. I mean, even in this episode, Xavier's like, I don't know that I want to be first lady. It seems like a bad job. And Lilandra's like, so's president. None of this is fun. Like,
I do not know which of these two stories came first.
Okay.
But this is like the same story as DC's Starfire and Blackfire.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I know what you're talking about. It's like the same kind of story.
Yeah.
Where it's like evil sister versus good sister.
Who's
going to
take the throne?
Yeah.
And I, for what it's worth, the New Titans TV show did a much better read on that. They like kind of rewrote it to make Blackfire a much more sympathetic character than she is in the comic books.
Yeah.
But it's like the same story. It's like, and I don't, they could have been coming out at the same time. DC and Marvel have this horrible habit of just copying each other. And it's like, there's so much of the same shit in both worlds. And it's like, you just kind of pick like which telling of the same fucking story you want. You know what
I mean?
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
Anyway, Deathbird later came to Lilandra's aid during the Kree-Shi'ar War. She was captured by Hawkeye, who was in disguise as Goliath, then later released and granted dominion over the conquered Kree Empire as Viceroy. And she was made leader of the Kree Star Force by Lilandra. Obviously, since then, the Kree have become independent again. But I think this episode is sort of like calling back to that a little bit with, you know, having Deathbird fight Ronin in that way. When fighting against the Phalanx, the X-Men allied with Deathbird. They fended off this assault on the Shi'ar Empire, where Bishop and her started to respect each other because he had no fear of all her bullshit, and that attracted them to each other. This is going to make you feel like things are wild. Deathbird offered to escort the X-Men back to Earth, but their ship was attacked, and she and an injured Bishop escaped on a private ship. She convinced Bishop that she had only survived while he was like sort of like in this like lab stasis.
Yeah.
And he eventually realizes that she's lying and that she was using the lab equipment to keep him in hold. And when their ship is attacked, he convinces to let him go so they can go fight against them together. And then after that, they become romantically involved.
That's fascinating. Bishop, I don't think I knew this. I don't think I read these. That Bishop
it's like a weird era. Yeah, and then Bishop and Deathbird finally return to the solar system, and on their way, they encounter a planetary mass known as the Living Monolith. They landed their ship on it to investigate the planet, and during that time, Deathbird betrays Bishop to the Skrulls, so like that's some sort of like Apocalypse the Mutant storyline. And during that time, like Apocalypse betrays her and then turns her into one of its horsemen. It's like typical bad writing Apocalypse shit, you know, like sometimes Apocalypse is written well, other times it's not. This is like one of those times it was not done well. Mm-hmm. When Apocalypse is defeated, Deathbird returns to normal. Then Deathbird and Bishop run into each other later when Earth has been made a caged planet, like a prison, and Deathbird has the key to unlock it. Bishop and Deathbird fight. After she gets sucked out in an airlock during the fight, Bishop is like, I really hate this bitch. Like,
yeah,
it's like he's just like, I can't stand her.
Yeah.
And then sort of like more recently in her storyline, Deathbird is rescued by the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, and Landrin imprisons her for all the shit she has done, where Vulcan is also imprisoned, and he later gets like released and he sets Deathbird free, and the two of them become romantically involved. Talk about two characters that deserve each other. Vulcan, absolutely. And Deathbird.
Yeah.
They are later married, but then are attacked by the X-Men, the Shi'ar and the Starjammers. And during this, Vulcan kills Deken and takes the throne as emperor and Death as his empress. There's also an insane storyline where she has like a baby, but she's like kidnapped by like a top secret organization, and they experiment on her baby, and then she like freaks out and kills all the people because they took her baby. What? I don't know what happened with any of that. Like, it's just like there was no follow-up after that, you know what I mean? Like, and then she was like recently in that like one shot story that was with like Lalandra. Xavier and Lalandra's kid, and she was involved with that. I think we talked about that a little bit.
I did find an old Reddit thread of people going, what happened to Deathbird's baby? So apparently we aren't the only ones who are like, what's going on?
Okay, so there you go. I'm like, I don't think that ever got resolved. Like, I don't think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, good stuff, right?
Great stuff.
Anyway, that's the show. It's been under 2 hours this time, so be proud. We did two spotlights, too.
I love that for us. I knew it would be short because I was like, we aren't going to have anything to fucking say about this stupid episode.
But see, I think I have a feeling that we're going to end on a high note with the last four episodes. And here's my reason.
I hope so. I'm worried after seeing the Sinister scene at the end of this, honestly.
Okay. But like, well, I'm worried about that. But in terms of like the writing and the pacing, the last three episodes are like one continuous storyline. And
that's
then the next
true.
One
and
is
that's
Bright
a good
Eyes.
Sign. Yeah, which Bright Eyes, what is that as a reference to other than the emo band Bright Eyes? Oh, okay.
Do you remember in the old TV show, like there's somebody calls him Bright Eyes?
I don't remember that, but I'm sure it happened. I can't believe you remember.
I mean,
that.
it might be an episode that's like entirely in the future, and then they're going to wrap up like the last three episodes in the present and
that
where
would
they
be
bring
fun.
It all together. I think that might be what they're going to do if I had to take a guess, but like we'll see. You know,
yep.
And if that's the case, then I think my concept idea of like, you know, Strife and Nate Gray with Sinister checks out.
Yeah, because we don't have enough cables running around. We need at least one
Not
more.
Yet.
Yeah. All right. Not a bad prediction. But so, also, we'll as everybody knows, we love to make predictions, even though the episode has already aired as I'm editing this. And that is always really fucking funny.
Leave it all in.
I'm going to leave it in this time. And people can laugh at it if they're like, Bright Eyes was actually an episode about Cassandra Nova. And then they can just
Bright
laugh
Eyes
at us.
Bright Eyes was actually an episode about Dazzler coming back to life and shooting a beam of light from her eyes into the universe. And then Lila Cheney shows up and they go on a tour together.
Should this be a new segment every week where we do bad predictions that will have already been wrong?
Well, no, because
it kind of
like,
is an unofficial segment.
It's only going to work for the next four episodes because then we go back to The Gifted, which I have seen.
I know.
So
I know.
Whatever.
Well, we can enjoy it while we can, at least until we get season two of this show again, and then we have to go back to doing this again, where we're going to be watching the episodes week to week and being like, here's our prediction. I mean, I don't know. At least we have some good X-Men content to look forward to,
We do.
Even like, when this ends and we have to do The Gifted, we're going to know we have season two, and that's fine.
But truly, because of the success of this show, we're going to get so much more X-Men content, period. So that's actually really promising for
it
us
is,
in general.
Like,
so
finally. Fucking yeah. Finally, because truly some of those Gifted episodes we were recording were truly harrowing. We were like, is the show over? We
oh
don't know what
God.
We're doing on the Mirror Mages
anymore.
But
I do think, I think it is, I'm excited because
we have entered a new era.
Well, I think it might line up perfectly. Like, we'll finish this really good X-Men show and then we're going to go to The Gifted and be like, oh, The Gifted, but then Esme will be there and then it'll just be like a fun show. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I think that's
and then we'll just
happen.
Continue doing The Gifted in between the other show coming out with season two, and then by then hopefully we'll have other things to watch, or we won't, or we'll watch Legion and Mutant X.
We have Legion, Mutant X, there's like some other TV shows. I've thought about us doing like book readings. Like, there's so many things we could do.
Yeah, that'd be fun,
you know. And
yeah.
Like, if you guys have any recommendations, you can write them into themutantages@gmail.com.
yeah, I mean, like the 2XL bot episodes, which are some of our favorites of all time, were the product of reader recommendations. So
yeah,
if you have any obscure X-Men content adaptations out there that you would like us to read, yeah, watch, whatever, please write in. That leads us quite well into the plug section, by the way.
Pluggy.
TheMutantAges@gmail.com.
It can't be here today.
It's still cold out. TheMutantAges@gmail.com is our email address. Also, we have a Discord server. It's really hopping these days. If you go to mutantages.com and look at that right hand side, you're going to find a link to the Discord server, an invite link, so you can join it. We also have a voicemail inbox, which is 1-508-319-1668. Leave us a message. We will.
97.
Why do you do that? Are you trying to screw me up by just saying other numbers in the background?
Like, yeah. What is the? It never works, though.
You're going to keep doing it just because. Also, we're all over social media. We're the Mutant Ages everywhere. I'm Minnie Myers everywhere. MIDIMYARS. How about you, Ryan?
I'm Ryan Pagella everywhere, except for Blue Sky, where I'm Roller Ryan. But you can pop on over to my other podcast. I don't think I've even mentioned it on here yet.
No, you have. You've mentioned it twice so far, but it's cute that you don't remember.
I don't remember. Well, you can listen to my other gay podcast.
Well, mention it every week. You should mention it every week. Why
not? Yeah, well, if you haven't listened to it yet, it's called Love is an Open Door. It's breaking down the queer themes of Disney movies and their related properties. So,
and it's G-rated, folks.
It is. Well, I was like, all right, well, like, I need this to be accessible to the general Disney fans, and there's a lot of them, so we're not gonna have toad references,
including
on
kids.
There. I know, exactly.
So we're not gonna
exactly
have
so
references to butt fucking as we normally do on this show.
Exactly, but
so
it's fun.
That's great. Family
but
friendly.
Also, you can pop over to my YouTube channel, Ryan's Adventure Life. That's where I like do all my theme park and travel videos. So you hear me talking about roller coasters and roller skating. You can see that over there. And you can pop over to the Mutant Ages channel, which is just kind of like in stasis until we finish this show. But when we are back to bi-weekly release, we will be
playing video games again.
We actually have already played them. They're just sitting there waiting to go live. I'm just like not doing it until after this show's over. So you guys have content every single week.
But we're going to go back and continue playing X-Men video games and other things. That's generally what we do on the YouTube channel. So you can see Let's Plays of some bad and good X-Men video games.
Exactly.
Over there.
Exactly.
And we also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/themutantages. We have bonus episodes over there, some of which are short, some of which are long, all of which are wacky and fun and worth listening to. We do movies, all kinds of stuff, movie reviews, whatever we want to do over there. So check that out. And also, our highest tier Patreon supporters get a shout out on the show.
Yeah. I don't know.
Deathbird being a bitch? I don't know.
I don't, like...
It's hard to imitate her because she just kind of has like a normal
listen
voice.
I originally was like gonna ask ChatGPT to give me like a She-Ra villain monologue that could turn into Deathbird, and what it gave me was like a 7-paragraph thing that was in fact all about She-Ra, like a villain, like it was like told from like Catra's point of view, and I was like, I'm not I'll send it to you later.
It's
like insane.
Weird.
I was like, ChatGPT knows a little too much about She-Ra.
Well, really what that says is the internet has posted a little too much about She-Ra.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not doing any crazy voices this week, but I will say shout out to Samuel B, Soren B, and Adam R for being our top tier Patreon supporters.
Oh,
yeah.
Brand new top tier Patreon supporter.
Yeah, welcome
to
the show. I'm sorry I don't have a voice for you. I just don't know what Deathbird would say other than be like, thank you for being my minions now that you're here working for the Shi'ar, and I'm going to step all over you.
Like, I mean, that is what she would say. I guess Sinister is also in this episode, but I refuse to acknowledge that, so don't be Sinister either.
I don't know what the hell that was. I mean,
I don't believe that. That's another voice we classically do, but I'm just saying I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's him.
I was not prepared for a voice today. I am sorry. But next week I will be.
Great.
I don't know what
whatever next week's episode
be.
Is. We don't know what it is.
I'll
but
just
we're
be
gonna
Mystique
do something.
And I'll be like, I'm Mystique. And you can't tell because I'm disguised as Ryan Pagella right now.
Oh my God. All right. So if you can't afford to support the show, we still love and appreciate you, but we do strongly encourage you to share the show on your own personal social media with your friends. Have them jump on board for X-Men 97. Why not? A lot of people are watching it. We're here to tell you what you missed from the animated series original version that the show won't tell you jack shit about. We'll tell you. And we'll also tell you that Xavier sucks and maybe even convince you that he does. That's another thing we do on this show, radicalizing people against Charles Xavier. And with that, our show comes to a close. And we'll see you next time, folks.
See you next time. No Italian this week.
No Italian opera, but I hope everyone enjoyed that last week.
Yeah.
You know what occurred to me? Like, are people going to know that was you singing?
I don't know.
I feel like they might
I don't think people know that I can sing. Like, I don't think that.
I don't either.
Until we do the musical episode of Mutant Ages of the Comic Book, and then they'll know.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
Anyway, bye.
See you next time. See you next time. That's not me singing. I'm just like,
see you next time. All right, bye. The Mutant.